$5 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, February 11th. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my co-host, Ray Valencia, and our new co-host, Jana Parker. Welcome to you all. And on our show today, we're going to take a look at DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, a 60-year federal initiative that's under attack by the Trump administration. But first, I want to welcome our new co-host, Jana Parker. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
It's great to be here. My name is Jana Parker, but everyone calls me Parker, so that's like what I go by. And I have been raised in Prince George's County, and I've lived here for the past 30-something years. I raised my kids here, and it's an awesome community. I'm very happy to be here. I've been politically active for several years, just informing everybody about what our county does, how it does it, governmental processes, and I'm just really excited to be on WPFW. It has definitely been a station that I grew up on, and I'm happy to be on right now.
It's great having you with us. And we're on with the show. We are, as you might be aware, in fundraising mode. And before we go to our esteemed guest, Satira Cook from the Southern Poverty Law Center, we need to do a little fundraising. Are you with us, Ray Valencia? I think she might not be. Anyway, we are in fundraising mode, and we need your support. We recently moved, which adds an additional incentive to requesting your donation to the show, but more importantly, to WPFW. We are listener-sponsored. WPFW and all of public radio is under attack by the Trump administration, and we need you to step up and show your support for this, I think, invaluable resource that is around since 1977, WPFW. We are alternative. We are not corporate-sponsored. We are not supported by thems that has, if you will. We are supported by you, our listeners, and we need your help very much at this point in time when how shall we say, our voice is under attack. So please chime in, 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. We very much need your help at this point in time. It's very serious. We've got to look at the administration that many are calling fascist, and I'm going to do a show on that. I mean, if you check the boxes under a fascist regime for the next 4 years, and alternative voices are very much what a fascist regime is going after, and we need your help. So please chime in, 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. You can also go to our website, WPFW.fm.org, and make your support expressed. We really appreciate it. But on with the show and our esteemed guest, Donald Trump is clearly going after DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, a six-year federal initiative. Joining us to talk about this attack and what we can do about it is the Southern Poverty Law Center's Sakura Cook. Welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
We really appreciate it. And we want people to call in, please. We're going to try and fit you in. We're in the middle of fundraising, but we want to take callers. We are Community Watch and Comment, 202-588-0893. Sakura Cook, if you could run down DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion's history. It goes back to the 60s. If you could talk a bit about that.
Absolutely. So as you said, diversity, equity, and inclusion, while a buzzword today, its roots lie in the long fight to make the promise of opportunity in America real for everyone. In 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson, after signing the Civil Rights Act, spoke at Howard University. And at that time, after signing the Civil Rights Act, he declared that freedom is not enough. We seek not just freedom, but opportunity. And he framed this as the next sort of more profound stage of the battle for civil rights. So since 1960, right, progress has been made through laws, amendments, initiatives like DEIA, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility programs, as well as affirmative action, et cetera, to ensure access to equal opportunity for all Americans in all facets of American life, whether we're talking about education, housing, employment, right? Access to certain financial services. All of these things, right? The laws and the sort of programs and initiatives that were championed by the federal government and by Congress under both Republican and Democratic administrations were all for the opportunity to ensure that those who had been locked out of opportunity had access to those on-ramps of economic opportunity. So this is an important initiative, not only to the benefit of Black Americans, who, of course, did benefit, but actually to everyone. Everyone was made better after civil rights laws were put in place to ensure anti-discrimination protections for everyone. And then special programs and initiatives were also put in place to make the outcomes of those laws real for everyone, both in the public sector, through the federal government, and in the private sector.
Right. I mean, Lyndon Johnson was particularly going after federal contractors who contracted with the government over numerous, enormous contracts. And it included not just people of color, non-white people, but also women in particular. I mean, it was a very broad directive that Johnson was addressing.
Absolutely. The federal government not only passed the laws, as I noted, but also committed to enforcing them, holding states and companies accountable for civil rights violations and ensuring that everyone, again, Black people, women, people with disabilities, low-income individuals had access to on-ramps of opportunity, especially in the employment space.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jana. We want to hear your input on this important initiative.
No worries, Jana, and it's Parker. I feel like it was really good that you brought up the history of DEI. You kind of touched on these big things and themes that it really touched on and dealt with. But can you kind of talk about kind of what the results of the DEI produced, like diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility? It does not just touch on just Black people. It touches on a wide range of people, a wide range of issues. And so can you kind of talk about like the important results that came from DEI in DEIA?
Absolutely. I would say DEIA, if you think about, sort of its impacts and how we've seen sort of DEIA, and I would actually just go back to the core, which is anti-discrimination protections through civil rights laws, right? How those things created on-ramps to opportunity, right? So whether it's, you know, a white woman who's able to file a discrimination case, right, a complaint against an employer, you can thank sort of DEI. If you're a Black or Latino man who now can apply for a fair housing or bank loan, knowing that the bank will treat you the same as everyone else, that is sort of DEIA or anti-discrimination protections at work, right? Our entire legal framework and the protections that undergird them, every American ensures every American is treated fairly in everything that they do in life. So that's sort of some of the impact, right, that you can think of when you think about what these sort of programs and initiatives that are born out of anti-discrimination protections through civil rights laws have done for everyone. Even access to education, right, Jana, Parker, excuse me, even access to education, you can think about ensuring the African-American students, the Asian-American students, that women, right, who are often locked out of access to higher education, have those opportunities. You can thank not only the civil rights laws and protections that have been put in place over time, but the special initiatives and programs that have been coined under the phrase diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those values are to thank for that, those outcomes, so to speak. I can just give you an example. And I think we have to remember and remind ourselves of why these sort of laws and programs were put in place to begin with. My grandmother is 95 years old. She grew up during a time in this country where segregation was real. She grew up in the South. My grandmother had the opportunity to go to college, but in the South and to pursue higher education. She went to a HBCU, which were started because Black people were locked out of white institutions, traditionally white institutions. But then when she wanted to go to grad school, instead of being able to go to the University of Georgia, they paid for her to go to school in New York because they did not want to integrate their schools. They did not want a Black woman going to school in Georgia. So they paid for my grandmother to get her advanced degree in New York City, even though she was she was born in Georgia, she had graduated college, and she was a resident of Georgia. She could not go to Georgia schools because they didn't want to integrate at the time. So they would rather pay for her to go to school in New York. So that's the history that many of these things are born out of. This stuff is not made up. And my grandmother's still alive. So that's the history that sort of we are always, as part of the civil rights movement, trying to undo and to ensure that everyone has equal access, everyone, Black, white, people with disabilities, women, low-income individuals, has every access to equal economic opportunity and the ladders of economic opportunity that exists for everyone in our society.
I think it's interesting that you bring up that your grandmother is still alive, because I think a lot of people don't understand that the people who have experienced direct, like, racism and indirect racism and just the systemic issues within this country, they're still alive. Even in my generation, we're still dealing with it. And we see the circle back of it coming again. But yeah, like these Black and white videos that you see that are put out when it was really color already at that time, these people are still alive. My father was part of integration, and he's still alive. And so things of that nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And their descendants who hold those stories, who remember the impact that it has been on their parents and their grandparents, are still alive. And to be real, have also faced forms of discrimination in their lifetimes. And so the work is not done. And what we're seeing today by, you know, actors on the right is not new, right? It has been part of a decades-long attempt to undermine the progress that has been made through the civil rights movement because of the desire to maintain power, economic and political power, to a small elite few, right? And that's what all of this is about, whether it's, you know, attacks on diversity, equity, inclusion, or attacks on affirmative action, or attacks on quote unquote critical race theory or book bans. We have to see the connection between all of these things and the desire to take us back to a time where access to opportunity was limited to a small elite few. And a lot of this is born out of the fact that we are changing demographically in this country, and where the majority of people in the country will be people of color.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really telling time, and your story of your grandmother is very very telling. So she did, in fact, go to school in New York City. Is that right?
Absolutely. Wow. She went and got her advanced degree in New York City and then went on to become an educator. My grandmother worked in Washington, D.C. for many, many years as an educator, worked her way up through the school system in Washington, D.C. And a lot of why I do the work that I do today is in part due to her story, to the legacy of my grandparents who were born in the South, to my mom, even though she was born in the South but raised in Washington, D.C., but went home in the summers and saw and experience segregation, right, in the summers. A lot of that I hold and have been, you know, sort of educated while growing up, the importance of ensuring that everyone, no matter what your race is, your ethnicity, your status, your economic status, your sex orientation, et cetera, no matter what that is, right, everyone should have access and opportunity in this country. And we as a country have to support everyone in being able to access that opportunity. And that's what this is really about. And I want to remind people that the assaults on our democracy that we are seeing today are in service of ensuring that a small amount of the few, the elite, the rich, et cetera, to ensure that they maintain power politically and economically at the expense of everyone else. No matter whether you're a white person, a black person, a woman, a man, you know, a person who has immigrated to this country, et cetera, what we are seeing today is an assault on all of our rights. And the sooner that we all band together and work together to ensure that our democracy is strengthened, to ensure that the civil rights infrastructure that our ancestors built and that we've continued to perfect to this day, maintain in place. And these are protections for everyone. I think people need to realize that it's not just about black people. These protections have advanced rights for women, for people with disabilities, for white people, white women especially, right? For low-income individuals across demographic sectors. The more we realize that and we understand what's really at stake is to decimate that infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. Then I think people will understand the need to remain engaged, the need to take control of our democracy, to use the levers of power that we have in engaging your representatives and going out to vote and calling your members of Congress on a regular basis to let them know about what you believe they should be doing, right? All of those things are critical in this moment. And as you said, I think, David, and you, Parker, to ensure and safeguard that our democracy works for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really telling moment, and we're under attack, and we're going to be under attack for the next 4 years. Incredibly consequential election that just occurred, and we need to be vigilant and stand up. We'd love to hear from caller 202-588-0893. And I think it goes without saying that we're dealing with the president who is kind of ostensibly racist. I mean, this is a man that, what, in the 1980s with the Central Park Five, took out a full-page ad in the New York Times saying that the five men that were under question for the rape in the Central Park Five should be executed. And they were later exonerated. We're talking about five young black men that were attacked by Trump. We're also talking about a man that went after questioning President Obama's birth certificate. I mean, clearly, an administration that is arguably, or maybe not even arguably, racist. Sakura Cook, if you could talk about that.
Sure. I think it's important to again, contextualize what we're seeing and make sure that people understand this is not new. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which was founded in 1971 in Alabama, was founded to sort of as a legal institution to support the efforts of Black people in the South, especially to combat the white supremacy and white nationalists that they were seeing, right? SPLC is known for taking on, at the time, the Ku Klux Klan. So our long history of combating hate and extremism sort of allows us to understand what's really motivating and animating this. Those forces, right, hate, white supremacy and extremism, white nationalism in this country are not new. They are very much ingrained in our systems and institutions, and it's why the civil rights movement was so important to combat those forces. And what they found in this new president is someone that can, you know, sort of articulate their rhetoric and spew their rhetoric from you know, the highest seat in our country. And that's really troubling. It's really troubling, but he isn't alone. He is backed by a set of organizations, again, that have the idea that, you know, sort of these ideologies should run and rule how our country is operating, right? And who the country should work on behalf of. And I think it's really important for people to understand that. And as you said, to engage in our democracy in more impactful ways. We've been looking at the cabinet, right? We've been evaluating the candidates that have been put up for critical roles in our government. The federal government has often been the backstop to ensuring the rights and protections for everyone in our society. It was established for that purpose, right? To intervene on behalf of everyday Americans. The civil rights divisions and many of these agencies are critical to ensuring the rights and freedoms of all Americans are upheld, right? And what we're seeing through these cabinet picks are ideologues who don't actually support, right, the maintenance of certain rights and freedoms, who think that the Constitution is up for debate, who think that laws that Congress has passed are up for debate, and that the president's power is infinite. Those are not the sort of values of a democracy. The values, especially not the democracy that we have in America. Those sort of ideologies and values are reminiscent of authoritarian governments, right? Are reminiscent of governments that centralize power into one person and not sort of ensure that access to power, that there are checks and balances on the system, that the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive are separate but equal branches of government that work in tandem to protect the rights of everyone. And so I think it's really important that people stay vigilant and pay attention to who he is putting in critical positions to ensure that everyone's rights and freedoms are effectuated. And that's going to be critical. Conversations about ending the Department of Education, right? Eliminating the Department of Education and turning back education's role to the states. But we knew it was the Department of Education that ensured equal access to public education in the South for Black and other communities of color. That's a critical point. So if we end the oversight role, if we end the role that the Department of Education at the federal level had in ensuring that all students, had access to a quality and equitable education, what will we have? And that's a real question that I want people to stew on. What will we be returning to if that role is gone? Yeah. And you have to stand up and fight. You have to use your bodies, right? You have to use your voice to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I
hear you. I have a feeling Jana has something to say.
Yeah, I just think that it's so important to kind of highlight how DEIA has really been misrepresented in the media and how it's been focused as almost a dog whistle to equate diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility to people of color being hired that don't have the competence level. And we're seeing like the exact opposite. I think we're seeing in practice what DEIA was meant to stop. When we look at the cabinet picks, it was meant to stop people who are grossly underqualified for certain positions that are only getting them because they are white men. Versus people who are overly qualified for positions that are people of color who don't get them. So I love how you touched on how DEIA continuously helps a whole bunch of different categories, people, subgroups, people of color, veterans, people with disabilities, white women. DEIA touches on all those different things. And so can you talk a little bit about how DEI has been misrepresented and maybe the reasons why?
Absolutely, Parker. I think you actually framed it well. It is being used as a scapegoat, right? It's being weaponized to suggest that women, Black people, people with disabilities, other individuals, that standards somehow have been lowered for them, and that any jobs or sort of benefits that they've received have been because of standards that have been lowered instead of the fact that they were qualified and well-qualified. And the reason why these programs were important, because well-qualified individuals were not getting access to the things that they should have been getting access to, because we had a system that was more based on cronyism. Right? Who you knew, who liked you, who was loyal to you, et cetera. And we are seeing, like you said, in these picks, individuals that have been sort of loyalists to the president and to the administration, not individuals, again, who have a long sort of experience or background in the issues that the agencies represent, nor are they individuals who have, in many respects, watching some of these hearings, ensure the American people that they will uphold the Constitution and that they will uphold the laws of this country first, and not sort of, feign their loyalty to the president over the Constitution and those laws. This rhetoric around DEI is being weaponized in this way, to your point, to do what we've always done to some extent in this country, and othering, right? To blame DEI on wildfires, to blame DEI on an unfortunate plane crash. All of these things are to be ensure that there's divisiveness in this country, and to be to serve as somewhat of a red herring, to sort of make people focus on things that actually aren't the problem, while they are undermining your rights right in front of you, right? And so if we understand that, if we understand that programs that are rooted in anti-discrimination protections, that are rooted in our civil rights infrastructure and the legal frameworks that we've built over time for everyone, no matter your race or your class, right? Or the income level that you live at, that this is for all Americans. And that's important, including white people. Period. That this is for all of us. That is critical for us to remember and be reminded by. And no one who has worked to advance themselves in this country, have earned the positions in the federal government, should be subject to the harassment that they are being subject to by this administration and those organizations and institutions that often foment hate and divisiveness in their rhetoric and in their work.
Yep. We need to take a little break. We are listener-sponsored radio, no commercials here at WPFW, Pacifica Radio for Washington, D.C. We would really appreciate your support in this perilous time. You're hearing voices I don't think that you're likely to hear elsewhere. You hear them here on Pacifica Radio, WPFW. Please chime in with your support, WPFWFM.org, credit or debit card or PayPal. You can do it online, or you can call in at 202-588-9739. You can do Cash App at $WPFWFM, we have a new way that you can support this community resource, that is WPFW. You can donate by text WPFWFM to 801-801. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. Make a contribution to keep this station strong. And in this tax season, your donation to WPFW is, in fact, tax deductible. So keep us on the air. We just recently moved. We need your support now more than ever to keep the lights on. We don't inundate you with commercials that you're going to hear on just about every other radio or TV station. We are asking for your support as an alternative source, and I think we can assume that stations, non-commercial stations like WPFW, are going to come under attack by this administration, and all the more reason to step up and show your support. 202-588-9739 if you want to call, or if you want to go online, wpfwfm.org. We take your credit card, debit card, PayPal. You can also do Cash App, $WPFWFM, you can donate now by text, WPFWFM to 801-801. We really need your support in these perilous times, so please step up and show the love, show the support, not particularly for this program, but for the community resource that is WPFW. We've been here since 1977, bringing you an alternative, non-commercial view of what's going out there in D.C. and around the country, and we need your help right now. So please show the love and support this resource that is WPFW-FM. So we were talking about how Trump is using DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's a racist dog whistle. It's pretty clear. I mean, we had this horrible crash a few days ago near Washington, D.C. at Ronald Reagan. Ironically, Ronald Reagan International Airport. And Trump, instead of consoling the nation, talks about, you know, it's clearly, it's common sense that the problem is DEI, diversity, you know, that essentially means that diversity equals incompetence. Sakura Cook, if you could talk about that. I mean, it's a, you know, it's not even that the discrete an example of a racist administration, of a racist president.
Sure. You know, what I think is important for all of us to remember is, again, this is not new. These attacks are an attempt to sort of blame and other individuals in this country who have fought for equity and opportunity and an inclusive and diverse society, which we all know makes us better. Diversity, equity, inclusion. If you poll Americans, in fact, a recent poll showed that majority of Americans believe in the values of diversity, equity, inclusion, and even accessibility, that everyone should have, that fairness and opportunity should be available to everyone, and no one should be sort of locked out of those opportunities. But in order to sort of push the agenda that they have, to give a reason for their desire in rolling back hard-won civil rights protections and infrastructures that have undergirded our society and our democracy for decades, not that long though, but for several decades, to improve the conditions of individuals in this country across race, ethnicity, economic status, et cetera. They have used and weaponized the rhetoric at DEI as something that's nefarious, as something that is bad for the country, to blame individuals at a plane crash on this principle, to suggest that individuals who hold these jobs, very challenging jobs as air traffic controllers, to suggest that they got those jobs, that the standards somehow were lowered in that instance for individuals, is ridiculous. Right? It's ridiculous to have a tragedy, blame a tragedy on that type of program, when the reality is, air traffic controllers have been severely understaffed. they had a, I think it was 30%, right, deficit in the numbers of air traffic controllers that they needed to operate our system in this country. And that's what we should be focused on. The administration should be focused on ensuring that everyone who gets on the plane feels safe, instead of disbanding the board that was established under Reagan's presidency that was in charge of ensuring safety in our country. That's the real reason, right? That's part of a contributing factor. It has nothing to do with DEIA, and it has everything to do with the policy choices that this administration is making that are undermining everyone's safety. Right. So people should be asking the question to the president about how are you going to ensure that air traffic controllers in this country, that we're fully staffed, that the FAA is fully staffed and has the leadership in the organization to ensure that safety, flight safety across the country is supported. How is that administration going to do that instead of, you know, falling into this conversation that is ridiculous about DEI? That's what we have to start to do, is actually look at what is, talk about the policies and not allow their rhetoric to determine the news cycle. And I really invite everyone, right? Regular citizens, the news media, et cetera, to really stop falling into the trap around these issues and to really peel back what's happening. What's at the core of these issues and talk about policy. What are the policies of this administration that are going to ensure safety? What are the policies of this administration that are going to ensure that individuals in this country can afford, right, to live in this country, that can pay their rent, that can pay for groceries, that can pay their light bill? That's actually what we should be talking about, because there has been nothing that this administration has done through any executive order or otherwise that is going to lower your rent prices or lower your groceries. And while Congress is about to move into a discussion about our budget, where they want to put billions of dollars into the military, billions of dollars into quote unquote immigration enforcement, while cutting social safety net programs, that is what we should be talking about. And not trying to, and this is what the administration is doing, you know, putting this thing over here, DEI, and weaponizing that to undermine your rights and your public benefits. Those are the things. All of this is connected. And I really want people to ensure and reach out to their members of Congress, reach out to your legislatures at every level, and ensure that they are, you know, undoubtedly condemning these attacks, but also elevating the issues that this administration should be prioritizing for you.
Yep. I think we have a caller. Are you still with us? Forgive me for not getting to your question, your comment sooner, but are you with us, caller? Appreciate you checking in.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it in a sense. But, you know, for 400, 500, 600 years, they have, and they, I mean religious leaders and European colonialists, have divided the world into us and them. And that's not just in the United States. And this is not new. I mean, it started before Trump. I heard somebody saying since Trump came in. No. Last year, the number of black students went down. We're getting rid of certain tests and other things that brought black people in. So it's not Trump. Trump just made it hot. You can see it a lot better with Trump than you could without him. I think one thing that will happen is the United States is going down, and so is this colonial world going down that has been dealing with us. And it's going down in spite of these things. No longer. When I was in the 1950s, when I was a kid, my father used to come home complaining right off the boat, and that made him in charge of me or whatever, or something like that. And if you remember, even further back than that, we couldn't get 40 acres in a mule, and they were giving 120 acres to European settlers settling in the West and the Midwest. As long as they had a certain skin color. It's nothing new. And when we got in that thing, and it was under, surprisingly, under Johnson, Lyndon Johnson. When we got civil rights and I was able to go to parks and other things without being segregated, there was something called backlash back then. And back then, the Dixiecrats and then led the white people in a backlash. They are fighting for what they believe in, and that is they believe in white supremacy and white superiority, no matter how much they put us out. And when we came in and we shined with our government in D.C., even though we didn't have complete rule. We shined in everything that we went into. But you can't just keep saying the billionaires want the control now, and they got people now who are not billionaires, who are middle class and whatever, and they're taking it back from them, and they want to get back to the European culture where there was kings and dukes and whatever, and everybody else is poor. And they're bringing that back, and so they're going to have you fight people who you shouldn't be fighting. You should be fighting them because it's not immigrants. It's not black people. It's not any racism, which is as strong, even though it's stoked up by them, as anything. And the world is changing. It's just changing slow. Don't be despondent about it. It is a slow thing, and it's happening, and I would not get despondent about it. I would fight and keep on fighting and organize and keep on organizing because other people are organized. And unlike in the old days, they're paying your congressmen and regular people to go with their interests, whether it's in medicine or whether it's wherever.
We appreciate your thoughts. Thank you so much for chiming in. Your thoughts, Sakura Cook, regarding our callers' concerns.
I think the two things that I would pick up on that the caller mentioned that I think is important, again, this is not new. We agree, right? Racism, white supremacy has evolved over time. And each time it has come with a new face and a new identity. But all, to your point, is backlash to progress. We saw backlash after Reconstruction. We saw backlash after the Civil Rights Movement. And we are seeing backlash to this new movement in light of changing demographics, in light of a country that is becoming a majority people of color, and the reckoning in 2020, this is the new backlash to that. And so you're right, we must remain vigilant. We must understand the history that we have and be rooted in that history, and then not be overwhelmed, because that is what many on the right would like us to be, overwhelmed by everything that's coming out of this administration, but to organize deeply in our communities, at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level. The American people are the watchdogs of Congress. We are the people that put them into power. And it is so critical. I can't say it enough. So many people don't understand the power that they hold, even if it's an individual you did not vote for. You are still their constituent, and you have the power to make your voice heard. So join an organization. Sign up for an organization like SPLC so you can remain informed and take action to reach out to your congresspeople, knock on their doors, ask for meetings, tell them what you would like them to be prioritizing. And as the caller said, I think it's very important to name that the 99% of us, right? We are one. It is us against the elite, and to some extent, and we have more of the power. And so as we can ensure that our economic viability, right, is prioritized by our leaders, our elected leaders at every level, we have to work together across, right, race, class, et cetera. We have to work together. And in a moment, we all realize that our interests are more aligned than they are divided, and that racism and sort of the economic forces that would like to keep people in certain low-income levels are the problem, the better off we will be.
I know we're coming. We have a few more minutes here, and so I just wanted to make sure. Okay. We have a few more minutes here, so I just wanted to make sure I asked you a really quick question. What does DEI elimination mean for government and nonprofits, that particular sector?
So many probably have seen the president's executive order that sought to eliminate sort of DEI positions and programs in the federal government. And I want to ensure that we understand that while the president does have authority to direct how federal agencies use the resources that Congress appropriates, that authority is limited. And he does have the authority to direct policy at different agencies. Again, that authority is limited. And so what we've seen is organizations that are filing lawsuits, right, to challenge the president's authorities. And so while federal workers, unfortunately, many of them who are, there was an organization that started something called a DEI watch list, right, that listed individuals who were hired for important positions in the federal government at different federal agencies whose backgrounds and abilities led them to be able to be hired appropriately for these roles and responsibilities have been put on this list and unfortunately have been harassed and doxed online by hate and extremist groups. And that's a problem. I mean, that is something that is a safety issue, not only for them, but these are people who signed up and said, I want to be a public servant. I want to use my skills and abilities to ensure that everyone in our society has access to equitable health care, right? That we are able to study the effects of different diseases on various populations of individuals, right? These are individuals who work for the Centers on Disease Control, for the National Institute of Health, et cetera. And so it's really alarming, but what I will say is that our legal infrastructure in this country is still sound. The president cannot unilaterally undo, right, congressional authority or any laws that have been passed by Congress. So it is legal organizations like SPLC, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the National Women's Law Center, the ACLU, have been fighting vigorously since the president took office and announced a suite of executive orders to undermine the rights in our country to protect those rights. We've seen, I think, just this week, a group of advocates filing a lawsuit against the administration for that executive order and seeking to halt and declare it unconstitutional. That executive order and the order that rolled back the EO of Lyndon B. Johnson from 64, I believe it was. So that is sort of what the impact has been. It is uncertainty for many in the federal government, but they are fighting back and they are working hard to ensure that these protections and initiatives stay in place. For nonprofits, it makes our work that much more important. It makes the work around civil rights and protections for civil rights that much more important. My work, my team's work is at the federal level, is working with members of Congress and the administration to ensure that they stand in the gap for individuals. And that's why I keep calling back to the importance of everyday Americans weighing in with their members and ensuring programs and services that, you know, sort of seek to ensure fairness and equity across the federal government are important, that they are maintained. And Congress holds the power of the purse to do so. So if you think about, right, for example, minority business programs or programs that seek to ensure that women are going into industries that they are underrepresented in, right, training programs and resources that go to organizations that help to move women into those types of industries. All of those things are at risk under this administration. And if Congress doesn't stand up and double down on its support and importance of those things, we will continue to see an erosion of the types of public services and supports that the federal government has funded at the state level and through agencies at the national level.
Yep. What is your advice, recommendation for our listeners to do? You know, we're everyday citizens. You're talking about the courts. You're talking about Congress. What do you recommend our listeners do, some of whom don't really have serious representation here in D.C., but we have listeners in Maryland. We have listeners in Virginia. What's your advice for how people can step forward and voice their objection to what's going on with DEI and any number of issues?
Absolutely. In the age of social media, right, where many people and young people especially get their news online, the first thing I will say is verify everything, right? I think it's important programs like WPFW that bring to you sort of news and information in critical ways are important to listen to educate yourselves, to question what you read and see online, to verify those sources. The age of mis and disinformation, where platforms are allowing certain types of information that we know to be false to be proliferated online, is really critical. So I would say make sure you educate yourself, make sure that you are checking and verifying sources, and that you are really doing in your research and understanding how our government works. We don't have civics in this country anyway. And so what often happens is that many Americans don't even understand how our government works. And so I think it's critical that we all work to understand that first. Second, I would say use those levers of power that are available to us at every level. Many people feel like the federal government is far away from them, not realizing the interrelationship between what state and local budgets rely on from the federal government. You think about disaster relief, right? Hurricanes that we've seen, and the money that flows from the federal government into states that benefit all of us. So understanding your government and weighing in with your local elected leaders is critical as well. But finally, run for office. I mean, when I talk to young people, I get them to think about how they can be change makers. You can be a change maker by joining a civil rights organization and becoming part of the movement to combat sort of white supremacy and the erosion of our rights in this country. But you can also decide, I want to run for office. And you can start at school, you can start in your colleges and universities, and you can start at the local level and sort of work your way up to the national level. I think that's really critical in this moment too, is that for individuals to become a part of our democracy in every way, shape, or form, whether on the outside or on the inside.
Yeah. It's so important that people step up at this critical moment. And one of the ways, as Secure Cook is suggesting, is supporting this public resource of the WPFW. And we welcome our new co-host, Jana Parker. Your thoughts? I mean, you've been a longtime listener. Your thoughts about the importance of a WPFW and the importance of supporting this resource at this critical time?
I mean, like you said, I have been a long time listener. I remember like coming home and just hearing jazz fill up the house and that peacefulness and that eclecticness, but also hearing like the political undercurrents of my community and learning from a very young age how important just having individual journalism and outside voices to really give a clearer picture of what people in our area and all over the country are dealing with and how they view the world. And so it is vitally important that we continue to uplift and support this WPFW. And so I just ask you, I urge you to send what you can for this particular funding drive.
Yeah, we appreciate it. It's great having you with us, Jana Parker's our new co-host and director of a wonderful PGE Changemakers, wonderful organization, grassroots, that's supporting people in PG County, which is, I think, the largest sector of our listening audience. And we so great to have you with us. You can click on WPFWFM.org. Use your credit card or debit card, PayPal, to support this resource that is WPFW. You can also call in, if you care, to 202-588-9739, Cash App, $WPFWFM. And we have a new way that you can support us, WPFWFM, to 801-801. That's via text, WPFWFM to 801-801. We so appreciate your support, and we are going to have to call it a day. Please show your love for WPFW, wonderful community resource. And thanks to our engineer, Mike Nocella, for pulling us through this show. And we appreciate whatever you can give And we hope that you have a safe and a bountiful week. And we will get back to you next week with another program supporting our community and our resources. Take care. Thanks to Sakura Cook from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Really appreciate your time and all your efforts. Much appreciated. Take care.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
People in the United States have rights, regardless of immigration status. Knowing our rights is the first step to keeping us safe against the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, or other law enforcement violators of our rights as citizens and immigrants. Guide to protect your rights. 1. Identify emergency contacts and memorize their numbers. 2. Stay calm if approached by ICE or other law enforcement. Do not run, argue, resist, or fight. 3. You have the right to remain silent. 4. You have the right to speak to a lawyer and don't sign anything until you discuss it with a lawyer. 5. If at home, you have the right to refuse entry unless presented with a judicial warrant signed by a judge. An ICE warrant does not allow entry into your home. 6. You have the right to an interpreter. WPFW, defending hard-won human rights, building a more just world, one broadcast at a time.
Whether it's the courage to tell the truth about displacement, apartheid, and genocide, or our commitment to presenting jazz and all of its extensions, as well as other liberatory musical forms, blues, hip-hop, house, WPFW has been an unwavering partner in the fight for social justice and the preservation of the culture. Now's the time for you to display your courage and commitment to truly independent press by donating during our winter pledge drive from February 9th through the 22nd. It is with your generous financial support that WPFW, this emancipatory educational media outlet, continues to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as
for close to 50 years, WPFW has amplified the voices, told the stories, and shared the history and culture of black people throughout the diaspora. In short, we are Black History. Black is WPFW. Texting WPFWFM to 801-801 will help to protect this medium in the black radical tradition so that we can continue to chronicle black hope, sorrow, and resistance. Black is you, black is me, black is us.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.